you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, you.
Plastics.
I'm going to get some money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Andy Nowicki back on the show. Andy, how you doing?
I am very good, Tim. It's always good to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back. Thank you. And, well, I want to talk to you today regarding your – of course, you are the host of the Nameless Podcast and the co-editor or assistant editor of Alternative Right. And I'm sorry, I don't have your book titles next to me, so –
That's fine.
I'll put it in the link.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, I contacted you because you had a personal experience with this melee down in Charlottesville. It was intended as a demonstration in opposition to the plan to remove a statue of General Robert E. Lee from Lee Park that was recently renamed Emancipation Park by the nobles among the city council down in Charlottesville.
The people.
Yeah, the carpetbaggers and scalawags. But anyway, right. So you were there, actually there at the scene, so I want to just kind of retell us what you're kind of tell us of your personal experience, what you saw, and we'll just carry the conversation from there.
Well, I went to the Unite the Right rally just because I was interested in taking it all in. I heard about it earlier in the summer, and of course it was getting a lot of buildup as a big alt-right get together in, as they say, meat space, M-E-A-T space, because the alt-right is generally over the last few years an online community, generally speaking, but this was going to be something where there were going to be all of these speakers, and there were hundreds of people coming. And, of course, the idea was that we were there to protest the tearing down of the statue of Robert E. Lee in Lee Park, or as it's been renamed, Emancipation Park, which is in the downtown area of Charlottesville, the same town where Thomas Jefferson lived much of his life and had a large establishment there, and had his rotunda and so forth. So I was just there, generally speaking, out of interest. I'm not a rah-rah kind of guy. I wasn't there to cheer, although I'm in sympathy, obviously, as someone who is alt-right or alt-right-ish. You know, I think
you have very close cropped hair, right?
Yes, yeah, that's right. I'm a skinhead.
Yeah, so, did someone mistake you for a skinhead? You didn't have a swastika tattooed on your head, did you?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'm not that tough looking.
Okay.
But I do have no hair, so okay. There's that. But so I was there out of interest, and I wasn't there I don't know. I definitely wasn't there to participate in any brawl, and as I think a lot of people weren't there for that, although they came prepared because we knew the Antifa were going to be there. So, or a lot of people, you know, came with very defensive kinds of costumes, shall we say, or whatever you want to call them, these kind of makeshift sort of costumes, you know, like you saw Bass Stickman, I think, was the one who made this sort of famous, the kind of knightish looking K-N-I-G-H-T costume.
Looks like something out of Road Warrior or something.
Yeah, like where you got the shield and you got the head visor, the helmet and stuff. And so I was sort of there in the capacity of, I thought of myself as an embedded journalist, kind of like journalists who go like riding on a tank with a bunch of soldiers into Iraq. I kind of thought of myself as going in that capacity. I was going to take some pictures. I was going to take some videos. I was going to write about my experiences and, you know, what I saw and heard. And so I figured it probably wouldn't be a good idea to just show up on my own. And because my impression was that things were going to get hairy, and I knew the Antifa were going to be there. I knew the Antifa are violent thugs. I mean, I know that already. I knew that already, and my experiences in Charlottesville just confirmed that even more. But I figured that it would be best. Plus, I would get more flavor and color if I were to go in with some people who are actually participating. So I know some people. Matt Parrott, who's the head of the Traditionalist Workers Party, or he's, I guess, the co-head of it with Matt Heimbach. I gave him a call and asked if he would let me caravan down with him and with some other groups, and he kindly agreed. So I rode in with this caravan. They went downtown together, staying together the whole way, and then everybody pulled into a parking garage downtown, got out, got geared up. You know, it's the ones who were there, preparing for a defense. And that's something that I want to emphasize, you know, that people say, you know, well, it was just a brawl in the first place. And some people who are trying to be impartial say, yeah, the Antifa are violent, but the alt-right are violent too, and they takes two to tango. But an important thing, an important distinction to draw here is the alt-right attendees of this event were there to attend the event. They were there to hear these speakers speak. Their purpose there was not to disrupt. Their purpose there was not to instigate. And a good point that I heard one of the leaders of the various groups, actually I think it was Heimbach who said this. He said some things that I liked and some things that I was kind of about. But
yeah. Well, that's true with this whole thing in general. It's a very diverse group. I mean, the alt-right is diverse, but you can have a disagreement regarding the taking down of these statues or not. I personally think it's iconoclasm. It's insane. You're destroying history.
It's fanaticism.
It's fanaticism. But I'm not going to go beat up someone for advocating that position.
Right.
The media says it turned violent. Well, no, it doesn't naturally turn violent. It takes individuals to provoke it. And that's your point.
That's a typically dishonest kind of way of categorizing it.
It's like when the cops say shots fired, right?
Right, that's right. Passive tense.
Yeah.
So Heimbach made the point that they came with shields. The Antifa came, you know, with bear mace, with, as we found out, bottles filled with cement, and, you know, You know, they had aluminum baseball bats and all kinds of makeshift weapons that were, you know, aggressively oriented. The alt-right, who was there, came with shields and visors. They were there to fight back and to defend themselves. And that's a crucial distinction to make. And, you know, it wasn't like a, like the Sharks and the Jets, like, hey, let's all, we're going to have a brawl. It's, you know, it's going down at 10 p.m.
And you didn't dance first. No, but anyway.
there was no dancing that I saw. So so there's that too. But yeah, the point is, you know, there's not this equivalency that some people are drawing. So I went down not really knowing what to expect. I knew it was going to get hairy, but I had no idea how things were going to develop. So we went down with the, or I went in with this largish crowd of maybe 100, 150 or so people. And they had their own medics. They said, okay, you know, we've got medics here. The old and the infirm should go to the middle. I mean, there was a guy, you know, sort of directing the whole thing. So it was really interesting, you know, like, they had the logistics all down. But of course, when we emerged onto the street, and there I was with them, you know, just sort of a normal looking guy in my t-shirt and khaki pants, you know, walking along with all of these people, many of whom were geared up. Some of them were holding flags, you know. But again, I sort of thought of myself as the embedded journalist amongst these people, you know, sympathetic to their cause, but at the same time, in my way, aloof from it all. When we got into, you know, down on the street, and, you know, you had to go up these steps to get to the park, to get to the entrance of the park where the rally was going to take place, that's where we immediately saw that things had gone haywire. And at the time, I didn't think this must be a coordinated effort. I didn't really think anything about it. I just processed it as it was happening. But there were no cops along the way guarding us. There was no barricade between us and these violent Antifa types. They, you know, and not, this isn't to say that everybody who was there counter-protesting was violent. I don't want to, you know, go that far either. There probably most of them weren't. But the violent ones who were there were immediately into mixing it up. They got in the way. They tried to prevent us from entering the park. There was, I think, a few minutes before I arrived at this particular spot, there was some spray of some kind of, whether it was mace or something, you know, you walked into it and your lungs started burning, you started coughing, and so it maybe had dispersed a little bit, but immediately from the start, they were spraying people, they were hitting people, they were throwing things, and the police were doing absolutely nothing. And so I knew it was going to be hairy, but I thought that there would be some effort by the authorities to create order and to protect people, to protect the attendees from the violence from the other side, and also to protect, you know, if there was anybody there on the other side who got aggressed upon. You know, I'm not saying this in a partisan way. They're supposed to be there to protect and to serve. That's the whole idea of law enforcement, isn't it? But the hour or so leading up to when the time when the rally was supposed to happen was just utter chaos. And, you know, I got up on the hill, you know, where the rally was supposed to be, and I took some shots, and and I did some videos and narrated them, and those videos are all up on YouTube right now for anyone who's interested. And so I filmed some of the melee, and again, you know, they were standing in the way, they were hitting people, they were throwing bottles, which somebody told me were full of cement, you know, intentionally, these were just absolute sociopathic, you know, intention to harm as gravely as possible. That was the impression I had from these people. And they were angry, they were screaming, they were violent, and nothing was done to restore the peace. So I took some video of the melee happening and the screaming and the shouting, and of course the attendees were fighting back. It's not like, you know, it's not like they were just singing "We Shall Overcome" and linking arms. You know, they weren't doing that, but I think they had every right to fight back, to protect themselves and to protect one another. Again, I'm just trying to present things in the least partisan light. You know, I'm trying to be objective about this, and what I'm relating to you is my objective observation. I know it may be tainted in the mind of some people who know that I'm in sympathy with the marchers in a lot of ways, in sympathy with the Unite the Right side, but I'm really just trying to present things objectively. I mean, and I think objectively speaking, it was a travesty. But it didn't really all come together in my mind until later. But at the time, I just noticed, I took some videos of, here's all this violence taking place. Here are all these Antifa, throwing smoke bombs, throwing bottles, what have you, being threatening, being violent. And here are all these police, and they're just standing up on the hill, standing there, not doing a damn thing. Well, all this violence is unfolding, you know, just, 100 feet away or so. And at the time, I was, I didn't think this must be a strategy. This must be a strategy, a coordinated strategy from the established authorities who maybe reached some agreement with these violent Antifa goons who were, as I learned later, many of whom were bussed in from elsewhere. But so that didn't come together in my mind, but I did at that time, but I did say to myself, this isn't going to end well. And I say that on the video. I end up, you know, saying those prophetic words, this is not going to end well, in one of the segments. So then the time gets close to when the rally is supposed to happen, and we get up on the hill, or up further up on the hill, closer to where the statue is. This makeshift barricade is formed, or it's there, but it hasn't really. There's no police guarding it or anything like that. So what good is it? But I'm told by some of the other attendees that we need to go up closer to where the speakers are going to speak. So I get closer, and then at that point we see this SWAT team. And I took some pictures of these guys. There were like 15 or 20 men in full SWAT gear, you know, body armor, face shields, batons, the whole thing. And they come swaggering in. I mean, you can't really help but swagger when you're in that kind of gear. It's just how you walk. And they just come and stand there, and one of them gets on a megaphone and just reads this statement, and he reads it several times, and what he says is something to the effect of, this event has been declared unlawful, you must disperse or you will be arrested. And then then a minute later he says it again, this event has been declared unlawful, you must disperse or you'll be arrested. And again, he's just reading off of a page. And it was at that moment, I didn't plan to get confrontational at all, but at that moment I got really pissed off, because I knew that this event, that the people who had organized this event had gone through all the legal channels. You know, they'd been given a hard time along the way. The Charlottesville City Council tried to scuttle the whole thing, tried to move it to a different location, but in the end, through a federal injunction, helped by the ACLU, interestingly, They said, no, you guys have to, this event has to take place. There's a permit for it. The attendees have freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and that must be honored. So it just, all of a sudden they come in just a few minutes before it's supposed to happen. And so arbitrarily just say, go away. This is unlawful. This has been declared unlawful. This is canceled. You know, it really disturbed me. It really bothered me. And so I took some rather confrontational videos at this point. I was showing the SWAT team and saying, this is what a police state looks like. This is what a police state looks like. There was some woman bureaucrat who was there and I kept saying, what do you mean? How is this unlawful? There was a permit that was acquired for this is, you know, they went through the proper channels, all the things I was just saying, you know, this is an event that is lawful, and this, shutting it down at the last minute is what is unlawful. And there was this woman there who was just very smarmy and said something like, well, you should look in the bylaws or something like that, but she didn't explain anything. And of course the cop who was who kept reading this this prepared statement through his megaphone, he wasn't explaining anything. Mm-hmm. Nobody was explaining anything. They were all just standing there. So the big guys in SWAT gear made it clear they were going to clear out the area by force if necessary. And at this point, some of the other people taking part in it was mostly speakers, I think. I know Richard Spencer was there. And I think maybe Mike Enoch and Nathan Domingo and some others. I didn't really, at that point, I was seeing red. It was hard for me to, differentiate or to recognize what was happening. I just had this sort of one track mind that this was wrong and this needed to be exposed. And so I was on this mission, you know, to expose it, to film it and then to show these images to the world. Of what was happening, but they tried to reason with these guys, these cops, and of course there was no reasoning to be made or to be done. A lot of people had already dispersed at this point, but some people were staying, and we got in a line together, and you know, did our little civil disobedience thing. We linked arms, and the cops, the riot cops, came in and tried to. And shoved us back, and we shoved back at the cops and sort of, you know, but we were leaning against each other. You know, it was kind of like a push ball kind of thing. It was rather strange in retrospect to think of it, but people were saying, come on, this isn't lawful. We have a permit, all the things I was saying. And, just trying to reason with them, saying, you don't have to do this. You know, we're on your side. We like the cops. And, you know, some people were saying things like that, but, mm-hmm. But eventually we tried to push back against them. Eventually they had the superior might. They knocked us back. I fell down, backwards, and I thought I was going to get trampled. Somebody scooped me up and brought me to safety, and I'm very thankful for whoever that was. But I kept yelling and shouting, and then there's another video where one of the SWAT guys comes over and says, and tries to push my camera away and says, this is unlawful. And I'm shouting back at him, you're unlawful. You're unlawful. And, I sort of I'm getting into this angry Alex Jones, kind of mode. I'm really, really, really pissed off, but I mean, what am I going to do? Right. This, you know, he's, he's a lot bigger than me, and he's got all this gear on, and and I don't, and so it's the, again, it's just the sheer arbitrary force of the police state. Mm-hmm. It could not be clearer that that was what was happening. And so, this guy manhandles me a little bit. I tell him to get his hands off me. And so it gets a little hairy for a minute. But he sort of pushes me back and lets me go. And then I try to walk around him, and then somebody maces me. And so it's the second time of the day that I get sprayed with mace. This time it's a much more direct strike into my eyes, and I stumble back, and all of this is on video. But I stumble back, and I'm like filming the ground for a minute or so while I'm coughing my lungs out and, you know, forgetting who I am, forgetting that I've got the camera on and everything. But I mean, I guess I should be thankful that they didn't confiscate my camera. It could have gone a lot worse. But so that's that. I sort of walk away at this point, and it's complete chaos. I mean, it was chaos before, but now, you know, we've got all Unite the Right people trying to make their way back to where they were parked, and they're getting followed by these thuggish Antifa goons instigating things. And luckily for me at that point, I'm, you know, I just sort of look like a civilian, so I could be just some guy, so nobody bothers me. But I just stumble away and find my way back to my motel room eventually. And what I'm my motel is like a couple miles away. I end up walking most of the way. But what I find out later is that the cops just, when they made everybody disperse, there was no escort. Again, they didn't provide any escort to try to establish or protect anyone's safety. They sent these people right back out into the lion's den, into this place where these violent people with their mace and their bags full of urine, their bags full of shit, and their makeshift weapons, their aluminum bats, you know, all these violent.
I wonder whose job it was to collect the crap. It must be like the new guys.
Well, to be fair, I didn't see any crap thrown, but I heard about it. I mean, these are things that the Antifa is notorious for. There's really nothing. I mean, there was a man there who goes under the name Baked Alaska, who's this internet alt-right internet personality who apparently had something like some kind of bleach thrown at his face that may have caused permanent damage to his eyes.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And they, again, the police just, they, in making everybody disperse, they just, there's no effort to establish any kind of peace or any kind of barricade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is just outrageous. The more I think about it, the more it absolutely, you know, somebody should be liable, because a lot of people got hurt on that day. One person got killed, of course, and without excusing what happened with the driver, which I didn't know. I didn't see this when it happened. I wasn't anywhere near it. But I know that these people were extremely violent. They were marching around, feeling their oats, feeling like they'd shut the whole thing down, and now that, you know, the streets were theirs, and so they were just sort of doing this, as it has been pointed out, as I heard Faith Goldie talk about this. You know, there was no, they didn't have any permit, these Antifa people, but but they were there, and they kind of had this. Rally where they were going around, you know, hooting and hollering about how they'd shut down the Nazis from being able to speak. And so this guy, you know, for what happened, this David Fields guy was apparently just driving in the midst of all this. He had the uniform of one of the groups, is it Identity Europa?
I think it's like American Vanguard or National Vanguard or something.
Whatever this this one group where they wear polo shirts and khaki pants. Yeah. So he was dressed in a way that, that made it, you know, that's made it clear, that made him conspicuous. And, you know, I think it's probable that he got harassed and either feared for his life or just got so just got panicked out of his mind or just got sick and tired of you know, getting menaced and just, you know, went into beast mode when he did what he did by accelerating the car and hitting a bunch of people, and which ended up killing the one woman.
Wait, yeah, apparently driving his car into the back of another car caused like a three car.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Exactly. Action.
And then. Yeah.
And, you know, without absolving him from blame, I do blame the police. I do blame the Charlottesville authorities for that happening as well, because, again, from what I heard in Faith Goldie's report, and it's confirmed by everything that I saw and experienced that day. The police apparently just totally made themselves scarce again. And they, you know, if they hadn't done that, if there'd been people out there, if there'd been medics out there within these crowds, it wouldn't have taken so long for people to get there to help. Maybe this woman could have been, maybe her life could have been saved. Maybe things wouldn't have never gotten so hairy in the first place that Fields felt that he had to drive his car into these people. In any case, they are, as far as I'm concerned, legally liable by negligence. And I think it was planned negligence. I think it was, you know, a coordinated thing. I think it might go up all the way to the governor's office, because Terry McAuliffe is, of course, the notorious Clinton goon. Mm-hmm. And you know, it might just derive from the mayor, who seems to be a real clown, and the vice mayor certainly. This I can't think of his name right now, but this anti-white, very angrily anti-white vice mayor, who's a black guy. You know, so the you've got this. This whole among the power elite, whether the city power elite, the city council, the vice mayor, the mayor, or if it goes all the way up to the governor, because I think it was the governor who supposedly declared a state of emergency, and that was the pretext, as I found out later, for why they revoked the permit at the last minute, or just, I don't even know if they officially revoked the permit, or if they just marched in and said, go, you know, we are the state, we have the guns, you don't, go away. I mean, that was basically what it amounted to me, but maybe the flimsy legal pretext was the state of emergency. But the state of emergency was because they didn't do their damn jobs.
Yeah.
It was because they were told to stand down. And really, the more I think about that, the more outraged I get, because that's just complete. I mean, saying it's irresponsible is I think an understatement. It's worse than irresponsible. It's, I mean, when they planned to do it this way, they must have known that it would play out like this, and they must have known that people would get hurt and possibly
people, people had to get hurt, because that's the only way to get any political capital out of it.
Yeah, and they didn't care. I mean, that's just, I mean, maybe I'm naive, but that's just I just somehow, when the raw facts just hit you in the face like that, the people in charge absolutely do not care and are willing to create a situation where they know people are going to get injured and possibly killed, and they do it anyway. I mean, I think those people should be swinging from nooses. I mean, I really do. That's on their, that's blood. They have blood on their hands.
Well, I definitely think that warrants an investigation by the Virginia state government, by the legislature, who has oversight over the governor's office, and the General Assembly is controlled by Republicans, if that means anything. And this investigation was this. I mean, obviously, he working in conjunction with the city government there, which is notoriously liberal, although it's in the southern part of the state, it's a college town, Charlottesville, and the you know, like I said, the government down, city government's full of what I call scalawags and carpetbaggers. He's from New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so they have no, they're very culturally separate from the area and from the most of the state in general. But a lot of these towns are like that in the South. Atlanta, New Orleans are very liberal cities.
Yeah, sure.
Where a lot of these monuments are. So they're using their political power to do this.
Right.
But it looks like there was a stand down orchestrated by the governor with the local government, because with the city government, because you needed to foment a situation where they get the pretext for declaring an emergency, and you had to have violence. And it seems to be they had any disregard for public safety, the threat to individuals down there who had a legal right to be there. Like you said, the protesters, the Unite the Right demonstrators who were participating in this event, they had a permit, so they had the moral and legal high ground here. Yet the police came down and just dispersed a crowd. And if, you know, going in and acting like a hooligan can destroy or cause a demonstration, a planned demonstration event, to be dispersed, then you can pretty much deny everyone their First Amendment right just by going and acting like, like a clown, because that gives a pretext to break it up. And if your demonstration is particularly not popular among the city and the people that run the city, and this should definitely, I think, warrants an investigation. And then, yeah, McAuliffe, he's a corrupt autocrat. He's, you know, he was involved in some of the more sleazy fundraising scandals in the 1990s. Never faced any legal consequences for this. He made a lot of money, for the Clintons, and made a lot of money from the Clintons. He kind of wiggled himself into the governorship in Virginia for some weird reason. So he became governor. But, you know, he was involved in a lot of the apparent cover-up regarding the Hillary Clinton emails last year, because he's the one that orchestrated a $675,000 loan to this FBI agent McCabe, who was spearheading the investigation of the Clinton's emails.
Right.
And just after he got the money, he got promoted, and his wife got $675,000 for this half-assed run for state senate or something. It was an obvious payoff, and there's no investigation of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a farce. It's just these people who are clearly criminals, nothing happens to them because they're powerful. And I mean, again, you know, the less naive part of me just sort of wants to reproach myself for being so outraged and about it, because, you know, of course that kind of stuff can happen.
The police are paid to do something, and they're probably down there in their black Ninja Turtle outfits collecting overtime. Doing what? And they didn't do their job, because their job down there is, once there's a permit issued, their job is to protect the rights of those people who are there lawfully.
Yeah.
Not to foment a crisis where they can claim under the color of law that everyone has to disperse. And then they don't separate the crowds. You know, there's things you can do that mitigate the risk of violence. Separate.
They did nothing. I mean, they didn't just. It wasn't just that they did stuff, but it wasn't enough. They didn't do a damn thing. Yeah. They didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And
I was reading
outraging.
I was reading an article about this. Some guy gave an example of, there was a protest in, I think it was Pikesville, Kentucky. Similar clash. But there, the police seemed to be acting in good faith.
Yeah.
And they kept the two sides separate. There was the counter-protesters doing their thing, and there was the demonstration, and there was no violence. And they had the event, the day ended, and then there was no violent, no damage done to persons or property. There's a way to do this.
Yes, absolutely. And this doesn't have anything, I mean, this is ancillary to the whole issue of whether the statue should stay up or not. I mean, that's what's so frustrating is,
that's what these clowns don't seem to understand,
It shouldn't be a political issue. I mean, you can agree to disagree about whether the statue should come down, but still think that the police and the local authorities have the responsibility to protect people from harm in a situation like this. Mm-hmm. And that's a completely different issue, and they absolutely did not protect people from harm. And again, it was appalling to see and to experience.
Yeah. It's what's happening is, I think they wanted a melee for the bad press they thought it would create, and still the mainstream press is still treating it as if it's white supremacist protesting the removal of Confederate statues, Nazis, and all this. So they're conflating a lot of groups, as opposed to might just be people who simply don't want their heritage destroyed, history destroyed, these statues torn down in a fit of iconoclasm.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe, or even just to pay for it, it's probably costing hundreds of thousands of dollars to do these things. And you have the spectacle in Durham, North Carolina, where you had a statue that was torn down by protesters out in front of a courthouse and not a cop.
Which was just a statue honoring the Confederate Civil War soldier, the common soldier.
Soldier. I think. Yeah.
So, like, we hate these common soldiers who probably, you know, who probably didn't own slaves, you know.
No, yeah.
Probably were forced into it in some way or other. This monument honoring them and their, you know, their bravery, the fact that a lot of them went to their deaths or whatever, and that's got to come down.
They were being invaded.
Yes.
You know, that's one thing these idiots, these.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, without getting I'm not Mr. Confederacy or anything, but Robert E. Lee, as I understand, was you know, a very reluctant, you know, participant.
He was offered the command of the Army of the Northern Potomac.
Yeah.
Army of the Potomac, and he returned it down, resigned.
He hated slavery. He freed his slaves. So, you know, he was a man of, from by all accounts, a man of impeccable character who.
Yeah, well, he resigned his commission, went home, and became a general in the Northern Army of Northern Virginia because of Lincoln's invasion.
Right.
Of the South, of Virginia. Because Lincoln had to get through Virginia to get down into the Deep South, because initially what you had the Gulf State Confederacy. These are the Deep South that seceded first in the winter of 1860, just after Lincoln's election. What brought on the second secession crisis was Lincoln's illegal order of 70,000 soldiers to invade the South, these states, and this brought on the secession of North Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia. And without that, you wouldn't have had a civil war. You wouldn't have had a war to begin with. But I'm saying this was what brought on the crisis. And that's when Lee resigned his commission, went down because his home, Virginia, was being invaded. And that's how people saw. Back then, people saw themselves as Virginians. And they weren't strictly Americans. This wasn't a nation state. It was a confederacy of sovereign states, a union of sovereign states that, you know, and they saw themselves as being invaded. That's how they looked at it at the time. This attempt to sort of this modern historiography of the Civil War is projecting a very warped view of that conflict because to serve contemporary, you know, political agendas. You know, the slavery issue has become primary since the Civil Rights era because that was a way to further sort of marginalize and condemn the South, the idea of states' rights.
Yeah, and people are just the people. You know, most of the people who are protesting, who want all these statues to come down, are historical illiterates.
Yes.
They don't know anything. They just know what they've been told. They know how they've been indoctrinated.
Yeah, they equate National Socialism with Southern culture.
Right.
That's quite so, a,
you know, preserving, being proud of Southern heritage, being, I don't know, honoring a great war general. Who was also, by all accounts, you know, a very man of impeccable character. Yeah,
and there's also this whole idea that the reason why a lot of these statues did go up in the 1890s, early 1900s, was this was an expression of reconciliation.
Right.
You know, and you know, so the understanding that okay, let them up easy. You lost the war. You're still American. I mean,
yeah.
And this changed, and now it's like everything horrible about the South. I mean, like the statue. Yeah. I mean, it's like it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's lunacy. It's lunacy. It's like the Taliban or something coming in.
It's like the Taliban. It's fanatical iconoclasm, and I've got to say, you know, I'm not a partisan rah-rah Trump supporter or anything, but I mean, I felt like cheering when he said what he said.
Yeah, about, that press conference. You know, idiot.
At the press conference that the press is all and the liberal establishment is all outraged about, where he made a couple good points. First of all, there were people attending the rally who were not Nazis or white supremacists, quote unquote. Nobody calls themselves white supremacist. Whenever I hear that term, white supremacist, nobody, that's not a term. I mean, people who use that term are illiterate. They're ignorant of what they're trying to categorize. So it makes me a little annoyed. But anyway, he made the point there were people there who just didn't want the statue to come down.
Yeah.
And then he also made the point that, well, if they tear this statue down, who are they coming for next? Where does it end? You know, Washington owned slaves, Jefferson owned slaves. Where does it all end? And that's a really good question to ask. It's a really good rhetorical rebuttal to people who are all anything that resembles anything that calls to mind the Confederacy just must go into the dustbin of history. Well, you know, Lee actually freed his slaves, unlike Jefferson, unlike Washington, and so forth. So there's actually a lot of ambiguity when I have a threshold of, okay, well, this person is okay, but this person's not okay. These people are, they fought for the Confederacy, so they're bad, but these people fought for the Union, so they're good. I mean,
yeah,
I understand it. Grant, General Grant, was a slave owner.
Yeah, he managed property.
Not a slave owner, but he was a.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. And General Sherman, I don't know whether he was a slave owner, but he was a sadistic son of a bitch. Shouldn't be honored by anyone.
Mary Todd Lincoln's family owned slaves.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Oh, well, really? Okay. So, yeah. I mean, it's complicated. Things are complicated. That's all.
And of course, the North itself, much of the capital that financed the industry, that they really provided the wherewithal to crush the South, was financed through the slave trade. You know, so not to mention the
absolutely, yeah. You
know. So it's absurd. Go back and you're expecting these people to completely transcend the age that they lived in. It's not going to happen. You know, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous standard. And it's all about destroying. I'm sorry, you're breaking up? Hey, Andy, you're breaking up?
Hello? There?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that.
So
go on. You were saying it's about the heritage?
Well, it's destroying. I think it's all part and parcel of this sort of this globalist agenda to destroy any cultural distinction or differences in areas. And the South represents a different culture. It is distinctly American, but it's a different part of America.
Well, and it seems to me that it's been, 2 years ago, I've got to say, before the Dylann Roof shooting 2 years ago in Charleston, I wouldn't have thought that, I wouldn't have thought in this kind of way about the authorities and what they were capable of doing, even though I knew they were capable of doing terrible things. I just didn't really entertain this level of conspiratorial thinking. But after the shooting in Charleston, I remember suddenly there was a coordinated effort that within days, Confederate any apparel with Confederate flags was banned from. Well, it wasn't technically banned. I mean, it wasn't against the law to wear it, but suddenly it wasn't being sold anywhere. Walmart ceased to sell it. Amazon ceased to sell, again, flags or T-shirts or anything. And it was like they were capitalizing on this opportunity to demonize the South.
Yeah.
And to culturally cleanse America of, emblems of that represent Southern culture, Southern heritage.
Mm-hmm.
They were just on it, immediately, and it was a clear collusion between big government and big business. Which I guess at an earlier time in my life I had thought, well, these two forces must be opposed to one another. And now it seems rather naively I thought that. But no, it's the same crowd, the same people. And they were exploiting this event as a kind of Reichstag fire. And this was another this has been another case just like that. In this case, you know, they've been trying to shut people down online. You know, the operations are all over it, and it was just, again, it happened like clockwork. And
it's institutionalized, because you've had outfits like the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL that you know, that goes after so-called hate groups, and they define what a hate group is. And of course, the Antifa isn't a hate group, whereas I guess Richard Spencer's group would be a hate group or something, you know.
Yeah, and I'm one of the 30 the ADL's recent list of the 36 most terrible people in the world. I'm one of them. I don't know if you knew that.
Really, one of you really? You mean,
yeah, just like
of,
they
of
came
7 billion
up,
people on the planet, you are.
I know. It's wow. quite a distinction.
Do your neighbors know this? I mean, the property values plummeting.
I don't know. They came out with this list. It was about the alt right and the alt light, and so they came up with this list of.
ADL works with the FBI, so this is official.
Yeah. Oh yeah. ADL. Oh yeah. I know. I'm aware.
Yeah. So I mean, so when they do this stuff, it isn't a joke. I mean, really, no one should take the ADL seriously, because that is a hate group. The ADL grew out of B'nai B'rith. It grew out of the Leo Frank trial in 1913, because of the attempt by the organized Jewish community to defame the South to protect this child murderer Leo Frank down in Atlanta. And they more or less exerted all the muscle of the Jewish media at the time. New York Times, these things were brought on board to try to create an image of this guy was innocent from murdering this girl, Mary Fagan. And in the process, they tried to frame two black men, by the way.
Very
interesting. No one talks about that.
I'm somewhat familiar with that, yeah.
So this began the war on the South. And they started using the civil rights issues, particularly after the Second World War, to go after the South promoting agitation. Martin Luther King had Jewish backers. These things, using the cause of civil rights to weaken and destroy whatever remained of Southern independence. And this isn't to say there weren't legitimate issues down there, but the goal was not to solve these issues and improve conditions. It was there to antagonize, to agitate and cause problems, just like the goals of integration in the North, the destruction of the ethnic neighborhoods under the guise of urban renewal, but also racial integration, wasn't there to integrate the races. It was there to create white flight, to disperse the urban centers, send them into suburbia, create the ghettos. It's all about social engineering. They don't have your best interest at heart. They're manipulating you, and they're creating these groups to fight each other. And, you know, they're breaking up the ethnic neighborhoods, destroying these meaningful communities to go into the wasteland of suburbia so they could have their American century, their empire, create the white middle class. And we're seeing that effects now play out, and sort of this deracinated, a white blob, which doesn't really have any identity anymore. So that works in favor of the oligarchs when you have no cultural or ethnic identity anymore. It's then all you can really rely upon are the consumer goods and sort of the monoculture that corporate America creates for you. And that's the long term agenda here. And is why the South is being destroyed, because it's culturally distinct.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's perfectly reasonable based on everything I've read and heard and what I experienced in Charlottesville, Virginia. It all makes sense. It all fits together.
George Soros, his outfit, the Open Society. They've been doing this in other countries like Ukraine, Syria. They're very influential. Influential behind the migration crisis in Europe, telling everyone have to accept these refugees, these migrants, because they want to destroy the ethnic-based European nation-state. That's openly been stated by Wesley Clark and by bankers like, what's his name, Sutherland, the guy.
Mm-hmm.
They've said this, all these things. This is the program in the United States. It's occurred here. You have his group. What's his group again? Yeah. Here in the States,
The Open Society.
Open Society, but the United States, he has another group. The name of it. But anyway, the funding goes into these groups like Black Lives Matter.
Right.
They're Antifa. And they're there to agitate and create these problems. They foment these crises or they exploit them, like Ferguson and these things, or like Mizzou crisis a couple years ago. Just absurd, you know. It's and they're just out there, constant agitation. It's there to create discord and violence, and that's you know. And it's again, this is what this is all. This kind of like hybrid. If you read like Andrew Caribo's book, Hybrid Wars, he's an ebook about this. How this has been used geopolitically in other countries. How you go in through NGOs and you fund opposition, you fund groups to kind of create mayhem. And if they're doing it in other countries, you got to believe they're doing it here. It's not a conspiracy. It's not wacky. It's not a crazy conspiracy theory. It's a very valid conspiracy theory because conspiracy
it makes sense. Yeah, you know? It makes sense.
And look how the media is playing it. It's like almost uniform across the board. The corporate media is spinning it all the same way. You know.
Yes, absolutely. Now, your listeners are probably interested in. I know some people in the alternative media have raised questions about. I mean, I've heard different conspiracies floated about what's his name, Kessler, the organizer of the rally.
Yeah, because he was a former like Occupy Wall Street, Obama supporter or something.
Right, right. And I know people have doubts about Richard Spencer. You know, I haven't been in touch with Richard for a while, but there was a time a few years ago where we were regularly in touch and we did podcasts together along with Colin Liddell. And as far as I know, he's not CIA. And so, I mean, I guess I don't know for sure. My impression of him is that he's, you know, he was, I saw, you know, his video that he made after getting maced and getting arrested and everything that happened. And he seemed sincerely pissed off. And I mean, if he's, it might be, he's just pretending. He might be just a really good actor, but my impression was that he was as outraged by everything that happened and as taken aback by it as I was. So my impression of him is not, I mean, I think there are some character flaws with him, but I don't get that impression that he's in on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, you have to look at this, take a more nuanced or sophisticated view of how this might be done. You might have, you know, like Gloria Steinem type characters who we think are witting assets. They're malevolent, openly malevolent, and they're there just to, you know, to create discord. Hers was to sort of this, foment this, the war between the sexes, and that was, she was a CIA asset, and sort of inject her toxins into the culture.
Right.
So she's a witting asset. You can be an unwitting asset because you can be led.
Sure.
You can, because the intelligence agency.
Well, we could all be unwitting assets, couldn't
we? Exactly. We'd be manipulated.
You and I could be unwitting assets.
Yeah,
as
just
well.
Talking about this. Are we promoting their agenda just by talking about it, by taking a side? And you have to be very careful about dialectics. It's you have a lot of people who are involved in these things who are being manipulated. We're all being manipulated to a certain extent because we're all being fed propaganda and you know, distorted information, or even just outright lies, fakery. These things. That's what psychological warfare is all about. So the action is in the reaction, as they say. So if you really want to get people fighting, if you want to create a sort of a gladiatorial pit by by aggravating cultural, economic conditions, social economic conditions, you get people fighting. You're going to create these you're going to foment these conflicts, and you're going to inject these messages into the media. You're going to have all this anti-white stuff that's constant in the media, promoting homosexuality, promoting going after what is called white culture. But really, I think whiteness is a construct. It's sort of a deracinated, byproduct of the destruction of the ethnic neighborhood, destruction of the ethnic groups in the 20th century. So this was a creation of suburbia. So generally speaking, I don't think whiteness really exists. I don't think we can fall back on that as an identity. I think you have to go a little deeper than that. I think, and I think ethnic identity is much more a natural and a much more defensible position to take than, say, just broad whiteness. But
you could say the same thing probably about different African tribes.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a bit more complicated than that. Particularly in the North, I think in the South you had a more general white culture, but it's very much more complicated in the North, and that's why when Martin Luther King went into the North in the 60s, I think he was paid by B'nai B'rith to do that, which is interesting. His mission immediately failed because he knew nothing of the problems in the North. He was from the South. He was dealing. Mm-hmm. He had relevance in the South. That was his mm-hmm. his home turf. So he knew what the problems were. He didn't have relevance in the North, right. And that's why he was sent packing after he went in 1966. But nevertheless, this whole.
By sent packing, you mean killed?
No. He went into Chicago telling these Lithuanian Italian neighborhoods that they had to accept integration. The only problem, these were ethnic neighborhoods, you see.
Oh.
So if you
see, I don't even, it was not, I'm not as yeah, you, I'm you, not as well instructed about that era of.
Yeah, he was basically saying is you all have to move, you all neighbors have to be destroyed because you're not. Well, no, these are communities that existed for a century.
That didn't get taken well, I guess.
No, and then someone threw a rock at him, and he went back. Even the black ministers said, get out of here. The mayor of Chicago said, get, I don't know what you're talking. It's complete. We have our problems, but they're different. Very different than they're in the South. But, he was shot to death in the North, of course, in the South, Tennessee. Yes. But and not by James Earl Ray. But that's a whole other story. But this dialect where you're creating this white identity, white nationalist movement versus these other groups, you're creating, there's no resolution there, right? There's no, and you're creating a divisiveness, which not going to end well. That isn't to say that, like I said, if a bunch of white people want to get together and form their own community and only have white people there, have at it.
Yeah,
if they're not,
you think that you think that they would want you? You would think that the liberal lefties would want that because they would want, okay, you're racist. You want to be a white, just living among whites. You're just a dirty, filthy racist. Well, go ahead. We don't want you here. We're going to have our multicultural utopia over here, and you racist whites can just go over there and rid us of your despicable presence. But somehow that doesn't happen.
No, and most of the multiculturalists are all white. Many of them are Jewish, by the way, and there's a reason for that. But because diversity is our strength is an ADL motto. And what I mean by that is their diversity is our strength. You see?
Yeah.
Because you're destroying any ethnic homogeneity, and you can't, without that, you can't have any community or identity, and you're weak. You're weak because you're stripped naked before the corporate state where you get exploited by the oligarchs because you no longer have a parish. You no longer have a community. You no longer have extended families to rely upon. You're all just atomized individuals, and we're all equal. Yeah, right. We're all equal to the equally enslaved before the oligarchs. That's what they want.
And
so it's a very tricky psychological warfare game. But at the end of the day, I have no problem with people of a like – of a kin wanting to be together. That's natural. And it isn't necessarily malevolent.
Right.
It's not necessarily malevolent.
And it's not supremacist either. That's the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah, it's not, to be a separatist isn't necessarily being a supremacist. It's just,
right.
But by and large, people like being around people they're like. It's just that in the late latter half of the 20th century, we were told we all have to integrate. We all have to be diverse and be around people that we have nothing in common with. And with that, and when you're like that, you have no community. And who benefits from that? Nevertheless, that's sold as the progressive. That's the progressive. That's the moral position to take. What if you like living in an Irish Catholic neighborhood? That means you're going to be around white people with very fair skin.
Yeah.
A lot of red hair. And you're going to relate to one another. You're going to have the same parish. You're going to have the same stories, even the same vices and habits in many respects. That's the community.
Sure.
But the one thing that's great about these communities, they have this inner strength, which the oligarchs hate because they become impenetrable. And they're not as easy prey for the corporate advertising and mind control that they produce. A good example was I was talking to a guy who said, he was talking to another guy, so this is related to me, that back in the early 60s, this is he worked, I think it was in the Wisconsin area, and they lived in a kind of a lower middle class Irish Catholic neighborhood. And some smut peddler came in selling nudie pictures to the kids. And he got together with a few of the fathers in the neighborhood, beat the guy up and kicked and sent him packing. That's not strictly illegal. But it's
old school.
but it's certainly just. That type of collective action is only possible if you know your neighbor, you identify with your neighbor, and you share values with your neighbor. Okay? Mm-hmm. In a diverse, you know, community, you're not going to talk to one another for the most part. I'm sorry, it's the way it is. You'd be polite, you say, how you doing, as you leave in the morning, but you're not going to know your neighbor, and you don't know your neighbor for the most part in these communities.
And who it's what they call the low trust societies.
Yeah, so homogeneity has its function as a practical matter. You need it. If you don't have it, you don't have a community. And if you gets community, is community racist? You know, are you ethnicist? Yeah. No, just that you like being around your kin. It's like, it's like, you know, like being more comfortable around your family.
Yeah.
You know, are you a familyist, or what would they call you if you know?
There's nothing wrong with wanting it or liking the familiarity of it. There's absolutely nothing morally objectionable about that.
And the problem with America is a proposition nation. It has no religion, really. It's not a religious state. It wasn't founded as a religious state. It has no one ethnic group. So for a while, what we had was we had sort of this, you know, you had pockets of ethnic enclaves and pockets, and they were pretty much left alone. And that's sort of a modus vivendi between the various ethnic groups. And also, America was decentralized politically, and that's the only way you really can function. And the problem was the WASP elite, the East Coast elite, wanted, you know, America to be an empire, and they couldn't stand this diversity, the various ethnicities, and they certainly couldn't have the decentralized old republic. So it had to be centralized, and everything had to be laid even under the bulldozer of the corporate state. And that's what we're seeing now. That's why the South is being harassed. You know,
the same bulldozer that's knocking down the statues.
Exactly, and that's what's happening. And you know, call me a racist for saying this. I know I'm not a racist. I don't have ill will to anybody. I want everyone to do well. But at the same time, I recognize, that's not how people identify with each other. We identify through our family, through our extended family, then our communities, and within those communities, your religions and ethnicities, they're the same. And you can't disperse it in the name of diversity and expect people to get along. They're not going to get along. And that's the whole point, by the way, not for people not to get along.
Yeah, it would seem to be. That would seem to be the point. So, that would seem to be the ultimate sinister motivation behind all of this, all these efforts. Before we wrap up, I wanted to just ask what you. I've heard a lot of people talk about. I mean, there's some within the alternative community who think that the car crash which resulted in the one death, that might have been a setup job, and I'm really less interested in that whole thing. Although I'm open-minded, but I haven't really looked into it that much. It seems to me that it's reasonable to think that it happened organically, just because for the reasons I was saying, that there was a lot of chaos created, and this is somebody's reaction to being menaced by a bunch of people with baseball bats and so forth. What really strikes me as strange, and I wanted to ask you about, is the two helicopter pilots who died. And that seems like that hasn't been talked about at all. But I mean, when I heard about it, I was like, what? They just crashed? I mean, and I remember that day being there, seeing the helicopter up in the sky, and that must have been them. Just the cops up in the sky patrolling getting a bird's eye look at the situation, and later I found out that they just crashed in the woods and died.
On a clear day, right? On a sunny...
I don't know what... Yeah, and this was like a routine mission. They were, I guess, skilled helicopter pilots. What in the world would... Why would... Yeah, it was a clear day. what in the world? Why would that happen? And I don't have a... I mean, there's a chance that it was a freak accident. But
yeah, yeah.
I think it's really strange.
It is strange.
Related, but I just want to get your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, this guy Fields, who has a military background, so that's, you can always speculate. You know, people have looked into the real life of Timothy McVeigh and suggest he was sheep-dipped, and that's a definite possibility. Yeah, that's a possibility here. Mm-hmm. Why
right.
was the wreck? Was it malicious? That's a whole other question. I read that original police had determined that it wasn't necessarily malicious, just he panicked, and that can happen in a situation like when you're in a crowd and they're attacking the car, or something popped in him. He got mad and got, you know. But then in running your car in the back of a car, I just don't. The whole thing seems very strange because mm-hmm. then he peels out and he. I saw the video of him escaping. And mm-hmm. it was very fast and looked very professional. So I don't know, but you know, so yeah, he's been charged. Whether he'll be convicted or not, that you know, that's I guess a question for a jury to decide.
If he's not convicted, watch out for the riots too.
Yeah, that's another excuse for a riot.
Goody goody gumdrops, more
but
riots.
I can see where you know this ruthless political class or whoever wants to stir up trouble. We need a fatality. You know, we need a fatality, just like they need fatalities in the Maidan massacres in Ukraine, where you know, this was fomented by outside forces. This is intelligence agencies, mercenary groups that are paid to go in there with sniper fire and shoot people. And this occurred in the Balkans too. I think it was, who is that guy? That CIA guy who's always on CNN.
Anderson Cooper.
No, this is not Anderson Cooper. No, you know the guy who always is he's a commentator. He comes in, a consultant. The movie that Siriana was about. You know, George Clooney.
Yeah, I don't remember his name. I know who you're talking about, though.
Well, he kind of casually talks about how in the '90s, their job was to go in and sow discord and foment violence in the Balkans.
Isn't he the same guy who said who just mentioned to some reporter that a bunch of people took out put options just before the 9/11?
Yeah, on
same,
videotape.
Is that the same guy?
I don't know why I can't remember his name. If he says, but he's always he's talking about these things. And yeah, he says, and he goes, that's the way the world works, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
But the OB talks about how in the '90s he was as a part of a CIA operation. They were going into. Create massacres or create rumors of massacre stories of massacre, even massacres themselves. And I have to think this involves killing people or getting people, creating situations where people kill people. That's what the Balkans was about. So if they're willing to do that, or to, you know, the idea of the Libyan fighting group where they went in and they stirred up a civil war in Libya to take out Gaddafi to serve some sort of geopolitical or economic agenda, stealing the assets there. Look at Syria where ISIS, you know, the supposed terrorist group that apparently when they attack in Spain, they're the enemy. When they attack in Syria, they're our friends. John McCain is taking pictures next to him, but they're paid, they're supported by Turkey, by the Gulf states, by NATO, to fight the so-called moderate rebels in Syria. They're to bring down that regime. All that entails violence and murder. So. You know, and there's a long story here in the '60s. Of course, the COINTELPRO, the guys out in Oakland, you know, the radical group, radical group,
Black Panthers.
The Black Panthers were radicalized and armed by CIA operatives. There's a group called the Blackstone Rangers in Chicago that received $900,000. From the Office of Economic Opportunity under Sergeant, I think it was Sergeant Shriver who was running at the time, but they got money to operate and they, you know, to more or less to operate as a criminal group to chase out the whites out of the urban neighborhoods. You know, so you have all this. You know, my point. There's an example of to suggest that maybe. You know, there's some sort of PSYOP or black operation that went in that intended to stir up trouble in Charlotte and get people hurt and maybe even get people killed.
So you think that
done all the time. It's like something that the Blackstone Rangers, you fund a criminal gang, and within that criminal gang, they're going to kill people, they're going to rob people, they're going to engage in extortion. Yeah. just to kind of to make life hell so people leave. And by making life hell, making things difficult, is you're getting people hurt and murdered. You're destroying their property. Yeah, it happens.
Right.
You know.
So do you think that the helicopter cops might have been some planned casualty? I don't know. That's
could be.
It's
strange.
Just me speculating.
I mean, it's like, remember SEAL Team 6? They were taken out for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on that helicopter. And then you have these FBI agents who mysteriously died in a training exercise, I think off the coast of Virginia, that were involved in the apprehension of the you know, the boss, the accused now convicted Boston bomber, you know, which is a ridiculous case if you actually look into that. And maybe they saw it's a loose end or something. You know, it's just, it is strange. Yes, it's strange.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything that's beyond just wild speculation, but I find it stranger than the car thing. The car thing seems like something that could have happened based on all the chaos that was going on.
But at the end of the day,
could have happened organically.
This was planned chaos. You get political capital. Okay, that's what it looks like. And what I mean by planned chaos is the authorities had it within their power. In fact, it was in their responsibility once they issued the permit to allow these people to demonstrate, and the police should have been there to protect the right to demonstrate. And they're very simple tactics that can be employed to avoid the very thing from happening. The stand down to me makes a prima facie case that there was an intentional stand down to foment the violence so you could have all this. You have the media coverage and all this stuff. And that's criminal. And there should be a legislative, a General Assembly investigation into the conduct of the governor, the mayor of that city, and the city council, and the police chief. Their blood was shed, and it's on their hands, and they should be held accountable.
I agree.
You know,
that's what I expressed that same point earlier. Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree.
You know,
it's not going to happen, but it should happen.
You're going to tell me that you don't have the right to go down and have a demonstration, have speeches, and they're talking.
Yeah.
You're just speeches about why the heritage of the South should not be destroyed in a fit of iconoclasm of, you know, left liberal iconoclasm. You know, these statues have been up there for a better part of a century, for more than a century, as an opportunity to remind people of the history of the area, and it's almost like they're wiping the area clean of history. That's ridiculous. It's on its face. It's insanity, and it's being done like as if there's no debate.
Yeah, well, you'd think that the onus would be on the iconoclasts to make their case, but somehow the onus is on the people who the preservationists.
I do find it interesting that the one statue, Confederate statue, that isn't being taken down, is the one for Albert Pike in Washington D.C.
The Mason.
The Freemason.
I heard about that somewhere. Yeah.
So that might tell us who's. What spider's at the center of this web here?
there you go.
So, no one's protesting that. That's in Washington, D.C. The only Confederate general has a monument in Washington, D.C. is a Freemason.
That's very interesting.
Well, Washington's a very Freemasonic city, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's designed that way. So.
Yeah. There you go.
So, anything else? I think we covered it?
No, I mean, that pretty well covers it.
You going any more protests?
I don't think so. I mean, I wasn't planning.
I don't have an appetite for those things. I used to.
I didn't think I would end up getting confrontational with anyone. I didn't think I would end up getting knocked over and manhandled by SWAT a SWAT team guy or maced. It all just kind of happened, and it was it was an interesting thing to be there for, and I'm glad that I was there for it. It was a significant event. And I had no idea it was going to become, you know, the story of the, like, all over the news, and that the president would be talking about it. And, you know, I knew it would be a story, but I didn't think it would blow up the way that it did.
Did you see the video of the statue in Durham where they tear it down?
Yes.
And then these psychopaths, the psychosis that must overtake these people, because they're kicking the statue like it's alive or something. And
they were kicking the statue and beating on it and that made them superior or something. Like, they were just really sticking it to all the white supremacists out there. I mean, it's just again, you're right. It's a psychosis. It's a fanaticism that just takes over.
And not all these
very
people,
disturbing.
And when you talk about Soros, these things, remember, you just throw a few dollars this way? I mean, who was that guy, Bob Creamer, who had to resign from the campaign?
Oh, yeah.
He was involved in designing all this. That's one of the things with this question whether Kessler is some sort of, you know, agent sent in to provoke these things. And this is precisely the type of, you know, game they play. You throw a few thousand dollars, you know, $100,000 at an operation like that. You pay people $80, $100, $120 to go down and do this stuff. And if you kind of foment this attitude, this sort of the spirit of the age, this sort of general attitude of hatred, extremism, people themselves become sort of these their own little Manchurian candidates. They can be triggered so easily.
Right.
You know, and so it doesn't take much to, do any of these people have like jobs or like children to take care of?
What were they all doing there at that time?
Because I'm thinking, if I'm at an event like this, I'm thinking, I'm not going to.
Some of us have to work.
Some of us have to work. You know, who are these people? You know, it was on a weekend, of course, but still.
Yeah.
You know, how do they relate to people? Do they, when they, in their lives, when they run into someone they disagree with, do they immediately start, you know, sticking, you know, flipping the bird in their face and getting, violating their space? I mean, they must get beaten up a lot because you can't do that in life without picking on. Who does that? Is it madness of the crowd, maybe? I don't know. You know,
I think it is. I think it's, I mean, I would say there's something demonic.
Yeah.
Positively demonic about it, really. Just like, I think it was Dostoevsky who wrote about the demons. I mean, in that certain revolutionary spirit of some. I mean, it's the same kind of manifestation.
And the self-righteousness in the midst of this insanity, that's another thing.
Yes, the sanctimony and the sanctimony and the hostility together, it lacks any charm whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It makes these people just totally, it's disfiguring. It's psychically disfiguring.
And really, of all the problems going on in the world, what's really going on in the world, you know, with all the
What are you solving by knocking over a statue of a Confederate soldier and kicking it?
Yeah.
that's how you're making the world a better place, huh?
That's going to solve, that's really what's holding you back.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah,
you know,
so
it's like all the student debt, like with the protests at Occupy Wall Street. You know, is this gonna relieve you of your student debt? Going to find you a job and be able to form a family and these things? No, it's sort of a surrogate to kind of point your frustration at, to direct your frustration. Misdirection or something. Yeah.
That might help to explain it psychologically. It'd be interesting to explore just what how it all functions on a psychological level.
So, but yeah, crowds are easy to manipulate, especially with social media, big time media, and that's mass media is always about psychological manipulation, and that's what's going on here, and that's obviously by the coverage of it, people being manipulated. If you just take in the mainstream coverage of it, it's obviously it's a misdirection, a mischaracterization of what occurred down there, and you saw it happen. And I think anyone with any sense would say, well, why would they go in and prevent these people who had a permit? But no one's, because that's not even talked about in the coverage. It's all about violence and extremism.
Yeah. And supposed conservatives, quote unquote, like Marco Rubio and John McCain and Mitt Romney, basically saying Antifa violence is justified. I mean,
yeah,
it's infuriating. It's positively infuriating.
The housebroken conservatives. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Exactly. So.
Well, Andy, thanks a lot. That's Andy Nowicki. He is the host of the Nameless Podcast, the co-editor or assistant editor of Alternative Right, that hate group that the ADL. He is among one of the 36 most evil people on this planet.
Yes, indeed.
And it's indeed.
Something you could all strive for out there.
And someday
you maybe can become like me.
Exactly. And if the Earth is the only planet in the universe that has intelligent life, that would mean you are the 36th most evil person in the universe. Think about
that. That's right. I know. The 36th most of all the... entities with consciousness.
Yeah.
That makes me even more evil, more wicked.
So, well, where are the ADL scoring like a badge of honor? So,
I do. I will.
So, well, Andy, thanks a lot. Anything else? Any new books coming out anytime soon? Or
I have a new book called, which is irrelevant to anything we've been talking about. It's called Ruminations of a Low Status Male. Anybody who's interested should check it out. I read a passage from it on my SoundCloud page. Check it out if you're interested.
That's something that all of us can relate to, I think. So, okay, great. And your website?
We are in the process of moving. I didn't mention that earlier.
I saw it because I couldn't bring up your website this morning. I was looking.
Yeah, our digs at Blogger, we got whacked by Blogger after all this went down. So,
well, they kick you out?
Yeah, they did.
So more censorship.
Yes, exactly. But we're working on getting it back up. We've got it back up. We're just putting the finishing touches on it, and it'll be back up soon, so look for it.
You happened to Red Ice?
Yes. I mean, it's all coordinated.
That day.
Yeah. It's going on all over the place. Like I said, it's the Reichstag fire. You know, it's all going down. But we're wily, and we're you know, we've still got all of our material. We just need to get it back up place.
So the place that hosts your website said.
They just sent us. Well. I mean, it was. It just disappeared. First of all, it was no longer there, and then we got a message within a few hours saying something like your site has been taken down for hate.
You know, this is. I mean, I can go to Amazon, and I can buy The Myth of the 20th Century by Alfred Rosenberg. I can buy Mein Kampf. Right?
You can buy a Nazi flag.
You can buy the Turner Diaries. Because they want that stuff out there. They don't want, like, reasonable, nuanced commentary. You know. Not saying you have to agree with everything, but it's like you're reading. So you can buy all the extreme stuff.
Right. You know? Let me say, I'll refer your listeners to I've got an author page, altrightnovelist.com. So if you want to look into my work, you can find it there. I'm still on YouTube, and I put my videos up of the rally, and I've got some commentaries up there, and my SoundCloud page as well.
This goes to that coordination, because all these are corporate entities. So that's the problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's some pushback. I mean, we've got Gab, which seems to be very dedicated to free speech, and some other places that are you know, tech oriented. I'm the least tech oriented person in the world, so yeah. I can't be of any help there, but there are some good people fighting the good fight, and you know, like I said, we should have the website back up, I'm guessing in the next couple of days, in a different location where we think it's going to be protected. So that's all I can say right now.
Is the Daily Stormer still up?
It got taken down, but they I think they found some way around it, because I was looking at it earlier today, but yeah, they got hit, they got taken down by GoDaddy, I think,
what are all the porn sites that you can access?
Well, the porn sites are being left alone.
That's fine. Okay.
Yeah, the child molestation sites are still up on Twitter and YouTube and other places, you know, lewd videos involving children are still up, but pornography is still up, but alt-right stuff, nope, that's just beyond the pale.
James Alifantis can still talk about, you know, having a family-friendly restaurant and make jokes about pedophilia on his Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No problem there.
Not a problem at all.
Not a problem.
Not when you're one of the powerful.
Oh, not one of the 50 most powerful people. One of the 50 most powerful people in D.C.
Yeah, he's one of the 50 most powerful people, and I'm one of the 36 worst people. So,
well, maybe if you start making jokes about pedophilia, that you become one of the most powerful people.
Yes, that'll be a way to raise my stature. I should look into that. So, you know, I'll become much more respectable that way. It's just an inverted world we're living in. It's the powers that be are just have inverted values. That's the only thing I can you know, I struggle with trying to explain it. And that's when I, in my book, Meta Pizzagate, I talk a little bit about that. That's the only explanation I can think of.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, Andy, well, I'm gonna let you go. Enjoy your Saturday evening. I'll probably post this to probably tomorrow. I'll send you the link.
Great.
And we'll go from there. So, okay, well, let's go. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and go out and, you know, do more evil.
I will.
Do you own a cat that you can hold? You can stroke on your lap as you ponk.
Yes, I'm going to go to my secret underground lair right now and plot nefarious things.
Yeah, you have the same haircut as
I do.
As a Bond villain, many Bond villains. Who's the guy, was it
Blofeld?
Blofeld, yeah, you got the Blofeld hairdo there.
Well, it's the Dr. Evil look too.
Yeah, the Dr. Evil too. So, okay, take it easy, Andy.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye. For having me. Bye.